The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
It's time now for a Smart Plain Talk regarding politics, Israel, and the law. This is the Victory Hour with Andrew Parker of Parker Daniels Keyboard. Wise counsel, winning results. Now, here's your host, Andrew Parker.
It's Sunday, 4 o'clock, and that means it's the best hour in radio of the week. It is the Victory Hour. Each Sunday, as you know, we talk politics, Israel, and the law. And this Sunday, we are very fortunate and honored to have a senior advisor to what I believe is one of, if not the best, think tanks in America, the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, the FDD, with us, senior advisor Richard Goldberg. And we're going to talk about Iran. We're going to talk about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, the Arab-Israeli conflict, the fact that peace has not existed in that area for hundreds of years. And frankly, while there was a march toward peace during the Trump administration with the Abraham Accords, that was halted quickly with the Biden administration. And while it's appeared to be regenerating itself through discussions with Israel and Saudi Arabia that were quite close to getting a deal, lo and behold, that fell apart. October 7th, that fell apart with Iran's fingerprints all over it. So to have someone who understands as well as anyone the issues that Iran poses in the Middle East in terms of opposition to peace and creating difficulty, we're very fortunate to have Rich Goldberg. Let me give you all a bit of background regarding Rich. As I said, he's a senior advisor to the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, and he served as the director for, in 2019 and 2020 for countering Iranian weapons of mass destruction for the White House National Security Council. He, previous to that, was chief of staff for Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner, one of the largest, I think it's the fourth, fifth largest state in the union. And before that, he worked with a good friend to the U.S.-Israel relationship and one of the best in all of Congress at the time, U.S. Senator and representative to the House of Representatives, Mark Kirk. And I know that the work that Richard Goldberg did for Mark Kirk was instrumental as well. Kirk and I knew each other fairly well. As he, every time he visited Minneapolis, we did connect. Rich Goldberg really has a phenomenal resume for understanding the background related to Iran and the difficulties that Iran poses in the Middle East to peace. And so for all of those who are calling for peace in the Middle East and who are protesting in the streets, Iran is really the hub of the wheel when it comes to forces against peace. We're going to talk about that today. Rich Goldberg, welcome to the Victory Hour.
Thanks for having me.
So, Rich, I want to start by asking you a little bit about the background. We're gonna talk about October 7th, Hamas, Hezbollah, the other proxies connected to Iran. But in terms of the hub of the wheel, as I described it, how did Iran become positioned in such a way that they could have such an impact on peace and security, or lack thereof, in the Middle East?
Well, remember, the Islamic Republic of Iran, coming to fruition in 1979 in the Islamic Revolution, is a revolutionary power in its name, the Islamic Revolution. They are trying to export their vision of Shia Islam, their version of Shia Islam, which is a very radical ideology in their view. They see Western institutions, Western ideologies, United States chiefly, second, Israel, being their primary enemies in the world that they need to destroy. And as they build up their power, both in their own neighborhood and abroad, they look to use asymmetric tools in order to advance their interests and undermine ours. So what does that mean? It means that they are not a great power. We're not talking about China. We're not talking about Russia. Today, or we know they don't have nuclear weapons. And so they are looking at, how do they compete with the United States? How do they attack the United States? How do they try to fulfill this vision, this chant that you hear all the time, death to America, death to Israel, when you're not an equal power to the United States? And so they look at terrorism as one of their tools of how to advance exporting the revolution into their neighboring countries throughout the Middle East to try to gain control, hegemony of the Middle East itself. And then, of course, how they can project that abroad. And then they have, over time, developed various weapon systems, ballistic missiles, more recently cruise missiles, drone systems, that they can either send to those terrorist proxies that they create and grow and train, equip and fund, and also use for their own purposes from their borders, projecting force, whether it is to potentially attack Saudi Arabia and their oil infrastructure, as we saw back in 2019, or to go out and seize the Gulf and threaten to shut down the flow of oil from the Gulf. This is what they have done over many, many decades. And so you think back to the 1980s, and those who are old enough to remember the Beirut bombing, the Marine Barracks bombing, Hezbollah coming on the scene and growing in strength and power. This was an Iranian creation. It is their primary proxy even today to project force against Israel and to potentially build a global network to be able to disrupt, attack, undermine the United States and our allies wherever we are. So Hezbollah exists in Latin America, in the Western Hemisphere, partnering with the cartels, able to come across our southern border, as we know, which is wide open. They exist in Europe, and they have plotted and carried out terrorist attacks in Europe, just as they have in Argentina many years ago. They're operating in Africa, not just the Middle East. And so that's just one piece of it. Hamas, another one of their proxies that they have come to and said, hey, we can fund you. We can equip you. You're part of our axis of resistance against Israel and the United States. Militias in Syria and Iraq. And, of course, the Houthis, more recently in the last decade, in Yemen, that you're seeing on the news every day, firing missiles, firing drones at the U.S. Navy, at commercial shipping. Where are those drones, where are those missiles from? They're all from Iran. And so they have created what they call the ring of fire around Israel and the Middle East, trying to create a Shia arc from Yemen all the way back up to the Mediterranean coast in Lebanon, while also being able to touch internationally through assassination plots, terrorist proxies, things that they have tried to do to U.S. former officials on U.S. soil, things that they try to do to our embassies and interests abroad, and of course, building longer and longer range missiles to be able to threaten our allies, to be able to threaten Europe, a dream of being able to hit the continental United States one day, and a nuclear program in the background of all of this growing to one day be able to threaten us as a nuclear power. and so, fully take control of the region and deter us.
So there is not a wonder, if you're listening to this, to Iranian expert Richard Goldberg, there is not a wonder as to why everything comes back to Iran when you're talking about the Middle East and war in the Middle East. Hezbollah, not just on the northern border of Israel, but throughout the region and even on our border and in Central America, just south of our border. Hezbollah, Hamas in Gaza, the Fatah and the Palestinian Authority and their connection and relationship, however dotted line that might be to Iran. The Houthis, all of them, this ring of fire. If Iran does not agree to the peace, there will be no peace until the regime is destroyed. And how that is done, well, we're going to talk more to Rich Goldberg about that, senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. You know, Rich emerged as a leading architect of the toughest sanctions imposed on the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the architect. He negotiated the deal that targeted the central bank of Iran. He knows from what he is talking. And so the fact that October 7th happened should not be a surprise as Hamas became closer to Iran. The fact that in the north they're firing rockets every day now, Hezbollah, should not be a surprise as Iran is calling the shots. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us as we're going to dig deeper into how do we get to Middle East peace? That's the question we're going to answer at the end of the show today. Until then, we're going to get some more background from Rich Goldberg, senior fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Stay with us. Go to Parker DK in the meantime. It's a short break, so don't go far. Important stuff. We'll be right back. We're back. It's the Victory Hour. I'm Andrew Parker, and listen, pull out your number two pencil and your yellow pad. Don't get it into your computer. It could break down, crash. Who knows? You could lose it somewhere. That yellow pad, you ain't going to lose that. No, you fold it up, stick it in the desk drawer, and you always have it. So jot this down. We are in the midst of our congressional parade from last week, Brad Finstead, the week before, Glenn Grothman. Coming up next week, Congressman Zach Nunn from Iowa will be with us on the Victory Hour. And down the trail, we'll have Angie Craig. We'll have Dean Phillips on the show, as well as Pete Stauber and Michelle Fischbach. Hopefully Tom Emmer will be on the show as well. So make sure to tune in every Sunday, 4 o'clock. We're talking to Rich Goldberg, senior fellow from the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Rich, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to comment on last week's reference by President Joseph Biden, where he suggested he might cut off military assistance to Israel if it moved forward with its military operation to dismantle Hamas in Gaza, in particular in the city of Rafah. Apparently, he didn't use these words, but a red line, one that if Israel moved in that direction, he may take some sort of action. What are your thoughts about such red lines?
Well, in general, I think the increasing hostility, the rhetoric, and now threat of action from the president has been exactly the wrong signaling to Hamas, to Iran, and the rest of the proxy network like Hezbollah at one of the worst possible times. The president has sent his CIA director to be in negotiations over a potential temporary ceasefire, another hostage for prisoner deal. Six Americans that we had heard of, we just heard that one of those six apparently is dead. This is some newer news we've just gotten out this week. But five, at least, American citizens that we know of potentially still held captive among the more than 100 hostages. And at the moment where Hamas is being backed up south in Gaza, the IDF moving from the north through the central Gazan areas, now in Khan Yunis, the second largest city in southern Gaza, the stronghold, the headquarters, really, of Yahya Sinwar, Mohammed Deif, the two top operational leaders of Hamas in Gaza. And as they're closing out their Khan Yunis campaign there, the next place to go, the last stronghold, the last stand for Hamas operationally in Gaza, is the border city of Rafah, down in the southernmost area of Gaza on the Egyptian border. And there is a massive labyrinth of tunnels underneath ground that we have now learned about. I didn't really appreciate in southern Gaza that connects Khan Yunis all the way to Rafah. And they believe Sinwar, Deif, the hostages, many of them are likely in those tunnel networks. And we're talking about miles and miles of tunnels. Remember, this is all the international aid that we contributed to for years that clearly got siphoned off.
Yeah, they created tunnels with it.
To build these tunnels. And right at the 11th hour for Hamas, really, where the moment is approaching where the IDF may be in a position to find and kill Sinwar, to take the last stronghold city, and not just any city, the area where smuggling, we know, is going on underneath the border of Egypt, of how weapons get through, how people get through. When smuggling from Khan Yunis all the way into northern Gaza is already starting at a low level, with Sinwar trying to find some way to revitalize his people in northern Gaza as the IDF has drawn down their numbers up there under pressure from the United States. They are already in a position, if the war ended today, if Israel stopped everything now and said, we're done, Hamas survives this war. And they don't just survive the war, they're in a perfect position to rebuild and to regain footholds and to reestablish Gaza as a place that can launch rocket attacks in the future when they rearm themselves, rebuild, and of course, potentially plot another October 7th. And not just the Gaza threat, the message to Hezbollah, the message to Iran centrally, is that you can pull off something like October 7th, a scale and scope of which atrocities we have not seen since the Holocaust. Some of the atrocities going worse than the worst stories of the Holocaust, medieval in nature, that can happen and you don't pay the ultimate price for it in response, that you can survive, that the international community, that the United States of America will stop you from destroying those that committed that atrocity. That means go signal to Hezbollah, go signal to Iran, to the rest of its proxies, keep escalating, guarantee of another October 7th, maybe on the northern border, one day on the Gaza border. Okay, so what does it mean that President Biden right now at this 11th hour says, I'm thinking of a red line. I'm thinking of cutting off military assistance to Israel if they go forward into Rafah to take the last stronghold of Hamas. Well, first of all, if you're Sinwar, you're sitting there saying, well, hey, the United States is going to stop the war and they're going to cut off military assistance to Israel. We're not going to lose Rafah. We can stay in the tunnels here and we can rebuild. What do I need to release a single hostage for? What do I need to do any deal making for? The United States is doing my work for me. And so, of course, the hostage deal collapsed. The ceasefire deal collapsed. And more importantly, it means that the United States president has a public red line that Israel cannot defeat Hamas in Gaza and not remove them from power in Gaza. So what is the day after? There is no day after in Gaza at that point. It's just endless terrorism, endless suffering, and of course, escalation in the north and elsewhere.
Is that, darn it all already, is that a peace deal? Is that the kind of peace policy that should be coming out of the United States? That is going to cause more war, more death and destruction, more hostages being taken because the strategy worked. And that is what Joe Biden does when he surrenders to Hamas. Now, people wring their hands. Oh, but what about the humanitarian aid? And oh, my gosh, and the death and the destruction. And of course, nobody wants that. But that lays at the feet of Hamas as well.
Correct. I don't know who bingo card, John Fetterman being the loudest voice to say that after the president of the United States does.
Yeah.
But my goodness, he's the one who's out there when the president goes and gives an interview and says these things, or his intelligence chiefs go to Congress and say these things, as they did this past week. John Fetterman is the one on social media. So, you know what? Starvation? Yeah, Hamas is starving their own people. Hamas is attacking the distribution networks and the convoys. Hamas is the people using human shields and trying to create suffering. Hamas is the one, by the way, also putting up false numbers of how many people have been killed. The president of the United States, originally, if you remember, months ago, right after October 7th, as the Hamas Gaza Ministry of Health was putting out all these numbers, he said, we can't trust these numbers. Joe Biden said that. 5 months later, you can trust the numbers. In fact, you can cite the numbers in the State of the Union and claim 30,000 people have died and not in any way question how many of them are terrorists. Is that number even real? How is it possible that weeks can go by that no male civilian ever dies, only women and children, apparently? So you are exactly right. The lesson here is every tactic used by Hamas, which is really an Iranian tactic trained to Hamas, which means it's Hezbollah tactics as well, human shields, disinformation networks, their process of terrorism, all can work.
Hostage taking. Yeah, and how they treated the hostages and who they took and the statements that they made to these. This is a whole elevated, you know, course now. It's not 101. It's now 5001. Advanced course in hostage taking.
And here's the good news, if there is good news, and that is the president of the United States is completely disconnected from the overwhelming majority of the American people. We know that from public polling. We see that reflected in the Congress, not from some of the radical leftists in the House and Senate who are standing up saying, yes, I want to condition aid. But the vast majority, it is bipartisan support for Israel, not bipartisan opposition to Israel in the Congress and around the country. And in Israel, this was an incredible thing. Is a poll that just came out. 75% of Israelis want their government to order the IDF into Rafah and finish off Hamas in Gaza, which is an obvious thing. If you know anything about Israel, have been to Israel, have talked to Israelis after October 7th. And it's not just Netanyahu or far-right ministers. Joe Biden and his administration have decided that to message how they are going to cut off Israel, they need to make it about Netanyahu. So everything's about Netanyahu's government. Netanyahu's the far right have done this. 75% of Israelis want to see the IDF go into Rafah, including Benny Gantz, the lead opposition figure who's in the unity government, including Gadi Eisenkot, who's lost his son in this war, who's in the unity government, former IDF chief of staff. Even Yair Lapid, who's still in the opposition, and nobody can call even center on the political spectrum, is for going into Rafah. So what Joe Biden has done is he has boxed himself in to this echo chamber of Hamasniks that serve in his administration and that make up part of his base. Everyone around him saying, you're going to lose Michigan. You're going to lose the election if you don't go all in against Israel. Well, my God, Mr. President, what do you think is going to happen to you with the rest of the country by just embracing Hamas?
You know, it is Hamasniks is a good phrase or term, but I think the administration is made up of Iranites. And that came from Barack Obama. And you know as well as anyone, Rich Goldberg, about the 2015 JCPOA and about the disaster that it was and about the fact that Jewish blood runs in the streets today because of the JCPOA in part and because of Barack Obama and the advisors that Barack Obama had that now have found their way into the Joseph Biden administration and are again calling the shots stupidly as it relates to Iran, as it relates to policy involving the Iran satellites of Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis. Bad policy. We're going to come back and talk further with Rich Goldberg, senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, knows as much or more about what's going on in the Middle East today as anybody here in the United States. And quite frankly, if we could get Goldberg creating policy there, we would have peace much, much quicker. But Joe Biden? No. He's more interested in the political soundbite and how he portrays it politically than caring about the one and only Jewish state in this world, the state of Israel. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're back. You're listening to the Victory Hour. I'm Andrew Parker, and I'm joined today by special guest Rich Goldberg, senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, a fantastic think tank here in the United States. Has been around for many years, and if you have not read articles written by those who work at the FDD and a lot of the policy implications that they press and oftentimes are reviewed at the highest levels, you should do so. Go to their website. And Rich, what is the FDD website? Is it FDD.org?
We make it as complicated as possible. Yeah. FDD.org.
FDD.org. So go there. You can see articles by Rich. You can see articles by others at the FDD. Some really sharp analysis. Rich, I wanted to ask you, because I'm interested, and I talked about it on the other side of the break a little bit. You were involved at the time of the JCPOA, and what sort of impact do you think that agreement with Iran has had on current events today?
Well, at the time, before the agreement was cemented, well, we were already in an interim deal from 2013 to 2015, but certainly from 2015 until President Trump pulled us out of the JCPOA, we saw what would happen if you were in an arrangement with the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism, paying them effectively a certain dollar figure of sanctions relief, meaning we lift our sanctions, we let them have access to billions and billions of dollars and gain new revenue in the tens and hundreds of billions of dollars over several years. What would happen, A, to their nuclear progress, even though ostensibly the deal is supposed to limit their nuclear progress? What would happen to their missile development, which was not covered by the deal? What would happen to their regional presence through these proxies throughout the region? And what would happen to those proxies in gaining sophistication on the weaponry not covered by the deal that continued to have all this money now being subsidized for the Iranian budget? Oh, and by the way, what would happen to the Iranian people themselves, the tools of repression, the budget of repression that you would be subsidizing? And of course, people forget this, but there were moments back, I want to say 2017, where there were wild predictions that there was going to be a massive regional war. And U.S. senators were going to the border where you have a limited war going on now between Israel and Lebanon, saying, Iran's going to start a war here. Hezbollah's feeling very empowered. Their budget's going up. Budgets of terror groups throughout the region is going up. The missile technology that Iran is providing Hezbollah is getting more advanced. This can't stand. Meanwhile, on the nuclear side, Iran was allowed to continue their research and development into advanced centrifuges to one day just install at the time of their choosing and leap forward in their enrichment progress, which is exactly what they have done in the last couple of years, because they're allowed to under the deal. Only now they have more advanced missiles, more advanced nuclear technology, stronger, more embedded regional proxies because of the mistakes that were made in doing that deal. Okay, you could try to correct for that. And we did. We did during the last administration. President Trump wisely pulled the United States out of that deal and restored U.S. sanctions. And it took a little while to build up towards what, you know, was called maximum pressure. I'd say by mid-2019, we were finally getting to maximum pressure, trying to drive Iranian oil revenues towards zero, pulling all the different waivers and exceptions that exist to our sanctions, looking for all the different places that were gaps in the sanctions to keep piling on, cause real instability for this regime, force the terror budgets to go down, which we in fact saw happen, and start limiting their access to technology, to resources, to research and development throughout their system, whether it's on missiles, nuclear technology, and of course, actually have some sort of credible military threat. Because when you're locked in an extortion game, you are, of course, the party that's showing fear. We're paying their racket because we're afraid of them doing harm to us. No, no, don't go forward in your nuclear program. Let's pay you instead. No, don't hurt us with terrorism. We'll pay you instead. But that's what happens when you're in a deal like JCPOA. When you get out of that deal and unlock all of your different resources, your tools of coercion, and you say, no, no, we are the superpower here. We're willing to step on your throat, deny you resources. And if you try to harm us, if you try to threaten us, if you try to go over a nuclear threshold, we will use military force. Qasem Soleimani learned about that.
Yes,
firsthand.
He did.
And so we go from 2020 early on when Qasem Soleimani is killed until Joe Biden is coming into office with no nuclear escalation by Iran whatsoever. It's amazing. It's breathtaking. The minute Joe Biden is coming into office, the Iranians start testing. They start saying, okay, what's going to happen now? Because this is the candidate who pledged to go back to that nuclear deal. And in fact, he assembles a policy team. He appoints one of the biggest Iran appeasers in Washington, Rob Malley, to be his special envoy.
Yep.
And he tries like hell for 3 years to go back to that nuclear deal, no matter what Iran does. Ratchet up to 20% enriched uranium, ratchet up to 60% enriched uranium, deny access to the UN inspectors to various key sites, start sending drones to Russia to use against Ukraine. Start a massive crackdown on women in Iran. It didn't matter what they did and what they have done. Assassination plots against Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State, John Bolton, my old boss, the former National Security Advisor, Brian Hook, the former Special Envoy for Iran under Donald Trump. They tried to kidnap an Iranian-American woman out of the port of New York. I mean, this is real stuff. Read the indictments. All of this happened in the last 3 years. Meanwhile, they're racing forward on their nuclear expansion, installing all these advanced centrifuges, creating larger and larger stockpiles of high enriched uranium. What does the Biden administration do? What does the president do? He says, keep offering them a deal. And last summer, he got into a deal. People don't know this, but right now, we are in a nuclear deal with Iran. It's far worse than the last nuclear deal. It says we will open up billions of dollars of various cash accounts, let the Iranian regime have access to these resources, so long as they don't take the next step and go to 90% weapons-grade uranium production, because that would actually force his hand politically and have a confrontation with this regime. By the way, when did the money start flowing? Last June.
That's when the deal was entered into? I don't know about this deal.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't read about this deal.
They won't acknowledge it because in 2015, when we were debating the nuclear deal, Congress passed a law that says if the president ever engages in a nuclear deal with Iran, he has to submit it to Congress first for a vote.
Yeah.
For inspection. So they don't want you to know about it. They said there's $6 billion that's going to go to Iran for five American hostages. Who in their right mind would pay $1.25 billion per person? It doesn't make that crazy. Just a couple weeks before that, $10 billion was moving out of Iraq to other accounts for the regime as well. They needed $6 billion plus the $10 billion. They have allowed the oil to flow to China freely. We got to last August, September. The Iranians had gone, by the way, down towards zero under the Trump administration on their oil exports. Leveled off around 500,000, 600,000 when Biden took office. Surged over 2 million barrels per day in exports late last summer.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Under this nuclear deal. And then October 7th. And you would think, after the largest massacre of Jews since the Holocaust, and by the way, not just that, one of the largest terrorist attacks on Americans in history, 35 Americans confirmed dead now, five more still hostage. You would think we would reverse this policy and shut down all the money. And say, yeah, you haven't kept your part of the deal. By the way, the UN says you're still racing forward on your nuclear program. Okay, you didn't go to 90%, but you're expanding 60%. You have more and more bombs worth of uranium. No. He kept the money flowing in November when that waiver came due for sanctions waivers. And no kidding, he's about to do it again. 4 months later, this waiver expires. He has to make a decision. And it's very clear they think their deal is working. Because Iran hasn't gone to 90%. So what's $10 billion more to the terror sponsor that's lighting the Middle East on fire?
So we are basically funding the terrorism that is going on in the Middle East. We are funding and cementing in place and supporting the current despotic regime. One of the most religious zealotry that we've seen anywhere in the world for the millennia. And the U.S. is supporting it with money. It's incredible. Talking to Rich Goldberg, senior fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Rich, I want to turn our attention for a minute to peace. Peace in the Middle East. Peace as it relates to the state of Israel. And whether there is a prescription for peace. And can this administration carry it out? Or is it going to take a change in order for peace to be brought to the Middle East? I don't believe there has ever been a peace deal in the Middle East that has not come from anything but strength. That is what is listened to, and very few other things. Accommodation and appeasement is the worst policy. We're going to be right back after this short break and talk about peace in the Middle East. Everyone is concerned. Nobody sees a path. They think we're further away than ever. Is that the reality? Or is there a path? Talking to Rich Goldberg, senior fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, and we'll be right back with Rich and may have some ideas. I've got some. We'll bounce them back and forth. Stay with us. Go to ParkerDK.com, a premier law firm, downtown Minneapolis. Top litigators, wise counsel, winning results. Parker Daniels Keyboard, ParkerDK.com. We'll be right back. We're back for our final segment. It's the Victory Hour. Thank you once again for joining us. We're with Rich Goldberg, and Rich is a senior fellow from the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, great think tank organization, and we've already learned a heck of a lot from Rich, but I wanted to get his judgment, his opinion, based upon his deep understanding of the Middle East, whether there is hope for peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians in the Middle East, and how or what the path is to such a peace, in your judgment.
Well, I think that there is a path to expanded peace between Arabs and Israelis. I think there is an expanded path to peace between the larger Muslim world and Israel. I think that Saudi-Israeli normalization is inevitable and is a question of when and how. And I actually think the Biden administration, in pursuing it the way that they have, has really done a number on the potential for that deal to come forward. We can talk about what that means and sort of what that deal could look like, should look like, might look like. But as far as the Palestinians go and Israel, you have currently, in my view, two major hurdles to a true and lasting peace. Two major hurdles. Obviously, Hamas in Gaza is a third. I'm not discussing that. We've talked about that one, sort of an obvious hurdle. But Palestinian Authority itself is one major hurdle. You have in Judea and Samaria or the West Bank, the Palestinian Authority's area of control, an institution that has never condemned the October 7th massacre, whose media and many officials have actually celebrated October 7th. Public polling, to the extent it can be believed in areas like this, shows almost unanimous support for October 7th among the population base. Incitement in schools, the textbooks that are used that really try to room Palestinians to grow up to commit October 7th. And in fact, the textbooks used in schools in Gaza weren't Hamas textbooks or Palestinian Authority textbooks. This is an institution that pays terrorists to commit terrorist activities. They put them on the payroll of the Palestinian Authority after they go to prison for a terrorist act. It's called pay for slay. We have a U.S. law that prohibits all of our assistance to the Palestinian Authority. A U.S. veteran was killed in one of these attacks, and his father lobbied Congress hard with a lot of other people and organizations behind it to get the Taylor Force Act into law to stop those try to stop those payments. And yet the Palestinian Authority continues. And so the idea that you're going to bring that body, who's, by the way, headed by a man who's on something like the 18th or 19th year of a four-year term in office, completely corrupt, focused on his own personal wealth, just as Yasser Arafat went before him, and his children's wealth and where they're going to hide their money after he dies. A security force that was set up inside the Palestinian Authority, trained by the United States and Jordan with our taxpayer dollar money for years, which has now clearly been infiltrated by extremists, by terrorists. We have seen over the last couple of years in the battles that the IDF has waged in West Bank towns and Palestinian Authority areas against terror cells, actual casualties on the terror side who turned out to be members of the Palestinian Security Services. We just had an incident that occurred just very recently of a terrorist attack at a gas station, killing an Israeli in his car. Turned out the terrorist was a member of the Palestinian Authority security forces. So all of that cumulatively to me means there is no path to peace right now with the Palestinian Authority as it is today and them being in charge of peacemaking, whatever that means to them.
Let me suggest a view on the subject. First, I want to underscore when you hear out there, when you hear the moderate Palestinian Authority, you now have the accurate description of who they are. They're not moderate at all, not one iota, as they cheer on the October 7th Hamas atrocities and wish only that they could have conducted that sort of attack and infiltration. But let me suggest, and I've talked about this with my listeners on previous shows, a 3 or 4 step process to move toward peace. The number one step is the removal of the tyrannical religious zealotry in the regime in Iran. That regime must be removed, and the people of Iran must be allowed to do what they want, which is the removal of that regime. And any sort of help to have that accomplished, because without it, there isn't going to be peace in the Middle East. They won't allow it. Secondly, peace deals between Israel and their Arab neighbors and the Arab world, as many of them as can be put in place, which will isolate the Palestinians. It will, and if the U.S. and Western Europe get smart and gains a policy that moves away from appeasement, it can further isolate the Palestinians. So they won't have anywhere to turn to say no to peace deals. They'll have to say yes, or at least get to the table on them. And lastly, remove the incitement, the education, what goes on at the mosques, all of that sort of activity that I don't need to repeat for you.
And to that last piece there is the second institution I would point out that is a barrier to peace, and that's the UN Relief and Works Agency, also known as UNRWA. We've heard about them in the press. We've now suspended funding as a government. I hope we never return any funding in the future. This is an organization that is built to incite, to indoctrinate, to keep the entire Palestinian generation after generation focused on destroying Israel.
UNRWA.
On wiping the Jews out.
UNRWA. It must not be funded now or at any time in the future by the U.S. or Western Europe. That's it. Another episode in the books. Rich Goldberg, thank you so much for joining us. Senior fellow for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Go to FDD.org. And Rich, again, we were honored to have you on. Hope we can have you on again.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here.
Until next week, to all of you out there, have a great week.
All the great things are simple, and many can be expressed in a single word. Freedom. Justice. Honor, duty, mercy, and hope.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.